This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with a Fulhamish podcast, and they are back. Last week it was the Dangerous George duo, but this time it is the regulars. It is the heartbeat of the Fulhamish podcast. It is Guy Barlow and Dom Betts, and as we know, Richmond Osman said it, we all love Dom Betts. He said it. We've heard it. We've got audio evidence.
I bring a team spirit, don't I, mate?
That's exactly what you bring. You are the lifeblood of the Fulhamish podcast. So much to talk about. Fulham in Friday night action once again, beating Swansea. We were talking about that. Then Fulhamish have done their own World Cup players of the decade, a poll in picking the best players from the last decade. We'll be reading out some of the results and those categories for groups there. We'll be looking towards the Bristol City game on the weekend, and then we'll be doing your listener questions. But it is a tradition. It is how we kick off. It is time for the free word reviews.
Right, we'll go straight to Twitter. You know, you can't do free reviews without including Richard Soul Bamba. Get him in. Mitro taking liberties. You know, Liberty Stadium. You know, great banter from Richard,
I like,
as always.
That.
We had MK84 with Rodakar Luck and Patrick Brown with Black Friday Wales. Moving, obviously, you know, the sales Wales. You know, I'll do the George Cooper and try explain all the jokes to save you trying to work them out. Off Instagram, we had Matt Bassin with Josh O'Nomar, Sammy Meredith with Swan on By, and Ted Hill Official with Marek's Rodaculous Knight. And on Facebook, we had Rick Carlos with Marek Mitro Magic, Dejan Stamenkovic with Better Vanelli, and Jamie Cork with Fulham Swan Song.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Guy, what was your highlight?
Of those, my least favourite one is the Josh O'Nomar. Like, I don't see how that's relevant, but I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I don't understand why he's come up and popping up in a three-word review. I like,
and also that is just two words.
Yeah, exactly.
It's either two or four.
Yeah.
People really struggle with a three word review.
It's a very complicated thing, Charlie.
Clearly.
But my favourite one is probably Mitro taking liberties.
Yeah, that's my favourite. Yeah, got to be strong start.
He's always taking liberties, don't he?
Always taking liberties.
15 goals, 18 games.
Oh, come on.
23 goals for club and country this season.
Oh, get out of here. What? Papa Dom wrists. Thank you so much. Loving what Mitro is doing at the minute. Absolutely smashing it. You know, even when he wasn't there, Fulham, they just found this next gear. They seem to be firing on all cylinders. 4-game winning streak for them. Dom, it just feels like they're peaking at the right time.
Yeah, it's weird Fulham playing well before Christmas. We're not really used to it. But no, obviously everyone was sort of like, not in turmoil, but there was a stage obviously when we lost to Stoke, those 4 or 5 games, and I was like, oh yeah, we need to win 4 or 5 of them. Didn't win any of them, pretty much. I think, you know, Luton, I think we won. But, you know, we got into a stage, and I think that international break has done us a world of good. We've come out of that international break, all guns firing, and yeah, I mean, we've looked excellent ever since, obviously, the international break. Obviously, Mitrovic was suspended for that game against QPR, but this game against Swansea, you know, we weren't at our greatest in this game. I'll be perfectly honest. We didn't deserve to be 2-0 up going into half time. Matt Roddick made some very, very important saves for us, but obviously we got the goals that we needed, and obviously they came through Mitrovic. But then obviously Kamara started again. You had Onoma in midfield, and yeah, we weren't the greatest in this game. But again, as I said to you, I don't think it really matters here. I think in this sort of run of games, which we've got against really tough sides, you know, Swansea, we've got Bristol City obviously on Saturday, Preston, Leeds, Brentford, all before Christmas. It is just about getting the results here and getting the points over your rivals.
Well, that's it. It's always points that matter. Yes, you want the performance, but Guy, any win is sweet, but it's so much sweeter when you don't really play well and you do come away and away from home, 3 points.
Absolutely. I think the away from home aspect of that is the most satisfying. Because last couple of away games, Birmingham, we didn't play all that well, got a very scrappy goal. And Mitrovic again with two goals. It does make you wonder, you know, even more so, where we would be without him. Because he's, you know, by far and away.
Boobage will just take over the reins
well,
and start banging in goals.
I was going to say, let me tell you a story.
Story time. I cannot wait for this.
Last time I was here,
okay,
it was 2 days before the QPR game, and we were discussing who should start up front and Mitrovic's absence. Yeah,
he was,
and I said AK 47,
oh,
and Denny Adoy, the first goal. Who got the assist?
Hello,
Denny Adoy. Who got the goal? AK. Thank you very much.
He knows.
And Dom laughed me out of the building.
I did laugh most people, but then AK-47 has come in and just blown people out of the water, literally. And I think that he has...
It was a big theme of last week's show.
But he has changed. I think, for me, there's no reason why Knockout should be starting ahead of him at the current
Absolutely,
moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, your favourite player, Anthony Knockout,
of
clearly.
Of course.
I think we're sort of... it's not just Mitrovic scoring. There are other players putting in good performances. You've got Kamara. We've got, obviously, Adoy, who's, I think, really played well in the last three or four games. I think Mawson finally had a good game against Swansea. I think Johansson is actually... He may not be getting the goals and assists he's been getting in recent years, but he's probably the best he has played in the Fulham team so far, just because he's offering a lot more to the team here. And, you know, people are often worried when, you know, we might not have a holding midfielder like Harrison Reed in the side or Kevin McDonald. But I think when Johansson isn't required to make those box-to-box runs, he's a perfectly capable holding midfielder. And I think that's what we're seeing. When they're not relying on him to create the runs between the holding midfield and Tom Kearney behind Mitrovic. And I think, you know, he's a really, really good player. And it is arguably the best football he's played at Fulham so far. And I think, yeah, we are getting there, that it's becoming an all-round team performance as opposed to relying on Mitrovic or relying on Marek Grodek or Bettinelli to make a few good saves.
Yeah, 100%. Well, obviously, we mentioned how important it is to still get those 3 points when you're not playing well. But, you know, we mentioned, you know, the five games and you only won one, Don. When we looked at those five games, we know the next run of fixtures is really tough, especially those games before Christmas. But it just seems now Fulham have started to create a bit of breathing space, Kai. They're up to third in the Championship, and where everyone still having that mixed form in different form, bar maybe the top two, Fulham have separated themselves a little bit now, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we spoke a lot about how we started well, and it started well, which is unlike us, rather. Even Mitrovic said in the post-match interview on Friday night that we never normally start this well. He was like, we're slow starters. He also took the mick out of Rolex English, which is really harsh, but that was really funny.
I missed that.
With these games to come are going to be, you know, the acid test for our season, really. I'm going to say it again, if we can be in touching distance of Leeds by the time we play them, that means 3 points, 1 point, whatever. If we can play against Leeds on Saturday 21st of December, and if we beat them, then we'll go above them, then I'll, you know...
Well, yeah, let's say even if they win in August, we in the Gardens, and we up to that game, if we win all our games, they win all their games, we beat that game, we're 2 points behind them.
Mm.
And, you know what Leeds are like.
Yeah, you do exactly know Leeds. Guy, you've mentioned this Leeds marker, this Leeds game, as the game that, you know, you really want to not test yourselves against, but it's the one you've always had one eye on. Why is that? Because you just feel that Leeds on paper, and at the minute, obviously, top of the Championship, they are the true test of this division.
Yeah, mainly because, I guess, we'll be playing them, you know, nearly halfway through the season as well. So it's coming at the halfway point. It's coming at, you know, during the busy Christmas periods. And we've already seen what West Brom are about as well, who are right at the top as well. So, and to be honest, like, I know West Brom might have changed a style a bit since we played them, but we should have beaten West Brom. We really should have. And we've been on a bad run since then, and now we're back on a good run. So I think if we can, like, lay a marker down and stay in touch with Leeds and then play them and then beat them, then that would just give us so much confidence to go on and, like, realise, you know what, like, we actually are one of the best top two teams in the division, as well as having the best squad on paper, you know, with all the talent we've got, Kearney, Mitrovic, having the actual belief that they actually are one of the top two squads rather than just saying they are, you know? And yeah. I think beating Leeds will really do that. And I don't know, we await Leeds, so we want to beat them, don't we?
We await Leeds to lay down that marker. But the games before Christmas, Dom, Bristol City, Preston, who are, you know, they've lost their last three games. Brentford, who are going really well at the minute, it has to be said, obviously, that 7-0 on the weekend to Luton. Then Leeds, I don't really want to go out of those games. How many points, I think, because we know what happened last time. But this is a key stretch of games, isn't it?
Yeah, I think these stretch of games, we always looked at these as, like, this is when it's not going to make or break our season, but make or break what we're going to challenge for this season. I think we're always going to be challenging for the top six, but these games decided, are we going to be a top two side or a top six side? Not only because of the points we're going to accumulate, but to express how we're going to play and how better we are than the opposition for teams in and around us. Because, you know, the likes of Brentford, the likes of Bristol City, the likes of Preston, I don't see challenging for top two. I only see challenging for top six. And if we can... not embarrass them, but if we put three goals, let's pass one of them, let's say, yeah, that's showing that we are the top two, we're not the top six. And I think that's what we haven't done in recent seasons. I didn't think that in either season when we got into the playoffs, we didn't really show ourselves to be a cut above the rest. I think maybe in 17-18 we showed we were a very, very good side on our day, but we didn't show, like Cardiff and Wolves did, that we can be a cut above the rest. And I think that's what we're going to do this season. We're going to show that we're the bully boys of this league, because for me, there's no team in this league we can't beat, and there's no team in this league we should be losing to.
Yeah, I do have to agree with you there. Guy, it's interesting. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself because of this four-game winning streak, but it just feels like in this four-game winning streak, Fulham have turned a corner in a sense that they've eradicated that odd mistake, that odd game. You know, we know that they go and they put a few wins together, then they have the Middlesbrough game. They put a few wins together, then they have that Hull game, or the Forest game, or the West Brom game, and, you know, another few wins, draw with Cardiff. Seemingly now, though, just these couple of games when it could have been a draw, you know, Swansea said lucky to be 2-0 up. It just feels like they've turned that corner in that sense.
Absolutely, and I think particularly our defence has come on strong in that period. Obviously, Rodak's come into the team, you know, now undisputed number one, which made a big difference. And we've closed out games. We closed out 2-1 at, firstly, we closed out 1-0 at Birmingham. All of these wins, apart from the Derby game, have come by one goal. So that's showing that our defence is improving. And we've mentioned the good performances of Mawson.
Revenge game for him of sorts.
Yeah, definitely. although he was booed a little bit, actually.
It's interesting, one, because they don't appreciate that he did move away when he was doing so well there. But
yeah, a little bit surprising, though. I feel like he gave all, you know, he didn't leave on bad terms, did he? But anyway, he's playing well for us now. It's definitely his longest starting stretch for us in his, you know, short Fulham career so far. But yeah, you know, there's that cliche, isn't there, that defences win you titles and promotions.
Attack wins you games.
Yeah, exactly. So if we can lay down a solid defence for the rest of the year, then I'll be delighted as a defender myself.
And well, it's interesting because obviously defence wins championship, but you know, it's interesting that this period of form comes around November, December time, because you know, we know the players know each other well, but this is still Scott Parker's first full season in charge. They're still getting used to maybe his ways, executing that game plan, and now, you know, he's maybe got to the point he doesn't need to tinker anymore, Dom, because he's found the system that works for these players.
Yeah, I think he has. I think you can see we're playing a lot more. There's a lot more fluidity to our play than it has been in recent games. We sort of had maybe 5-10 minute spells in games where we've looked phenomenal. There's anomalies like the, I don't want to say anomalies, but there's games like the Reading game and like the Millwall game where we were just putting teams to the sword. But I think we're finally seeing a Scott Parker team. What Scott Parker wants to see from his players, because they're playing in a similar way consistently. And I think Scott Parker's team, I don't think it's about blowing teams away. I think it's just being effective in the way we play, and that's what you want. If you look at the teams who win the title, except for maybe this Man City team over the last couple of years, in most divisions, the team that wins the league, especially when it's by close margins, is the team that's the most effective. If you look at Newcastle, and even if you look at Wolves to an extent in recent years in the Championship, these aren't teams who have blown them away through their extravagant play. It's teams who have been effective in the way they play and got the results that they needed. Because that Newcastle team didn't really batter many teams. They got, you know, 2-1s, 2-0s. You know, I think that's what this Fulham team's about. When you got someone like Mitrovic up front, if you just make sure your defence is solid at the back, you're going to score goals.
Yeah, I completely feel you're right. It is all about efficiency. Just very quickly on Scott Parker, obviously, there's been a little bit of noise the last few days because he was linked with a Watford job. I find it all a bit incredible, really. I'm not sure how. Obviously, his odds were slashed. I don't know where this happened. What have you two made from it, and what is the noise coming out of Fulham, Guy?
I think it was more like what for thinking, because it doesn't make sense for either party.
Yeah.
Why would Scott Parker be the man to save Watford from relegation when he's only managed as caretaker role in the Premier League, and then why would he leave Fulham for Watford, because they're a team on the down, Fulham are a team on the up? You know, he's been at Fulham for a high amount of years. You know, he knows all these players. I don't know. Maybe it was just a few people having a flutter on a certain manager, and that's what caused it to drop. But yeah, I don't think there's any sort of news to it whatsoever. And you know, yeah, I think he's going to be here for the short term future anyway.
I agree. Yeah, I was saying to Dom outside, actually, what clown has stuck a bit of money on Parker going to Watford and caused all this drama? Because I hadn't heard anything about it until Dom mentioned it just now. So
it was just
I find it madness.
Just a tweet from Sack Race or something that said, the odds have been slashed. That's anything anyone saw about it. There was no link in the papers or in the media. It just, the odds were slashed. Maybe someone's had a bit of a flutter on it. But anyway, I think Scott Parker, he is finally showing what he wants from this team, and that's good to see, because earlier on in the season there were doubts that, you know, the lineups were changing, you know, we didn't know what kind of football we were going to be playing. It just looked like we were just playing passive football with that for the possession for the sake of possession again. But I think we're finally seeing what Scott Parker wants to see from the Fulham side, and that is effectiveness, not necessarily blowing teams away with goals and possession, but just being effective and, you know, getting the wins that we need.
Well, it's all about effectiveness, and next we're going to be talking about the Fulhamish poll of their players of the decade. How effective were you in your voting?
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
We're Fulham, and this is the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with the Fulhamish podcast, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow. Just before we talk about the Fulhamish World Cup of players of the decade, so many groups, so many good players, it's a real debate. Me and Dom were getting into it earlier, looking forward to it. Just quickly, it was the FA Cup third round draw this week, Fulham getting Villa. Guy is already shaking his head. Guy, why so?
That's one of the most boring draws you could think of.
No, it could have been Southampton at home again.
Oh, man.
for three times in three seasons.
It's so bad.
So, not happy, Guy?
No. I guess there is a little bit of a rivalry with Villa these days, and I really don't like them. And
What? I don't know of this rivalry. Why?
Well, I guess we've played them a few times, and, you know, it's a bit back and forth. We'd always lose at their place, and then we'd beat them at the Cottage, and then obviously the playoff final. So it comes from that. I say rivalry, I mean, I don't like them.
Where all rivalries are born from.
But that's about it. So
rivalry.
It's just boring, isn't it? We've played him so many times in the past few years.
It's just that we haven't had a good cup draw in 11 years. Our last good cup draw was Kettering away in the third round. And then since then, we've had nothing. I think what, maybe a Sheffield Wednesday in 2009? But, like,
what do you consider a good cup draw? You mean a great away day for you, Dom?
I just mean, yes. I just want, and it's just a new ground away from home. That's right, all I okay. want. It's not like I need it to be like.
You don't care about progressing. You just want a great away day trip.
Yeah, I don't care. We're not going to win it.
Oh, Dom, come on. It's the magic of the cup.
The magic of the cup, which we're never going to win.
Why?
I just. Unless we're like. Where we were in 2009, then we possibly would
goat
have had,
season.
Yeah, goat season. when we would have had a chance, right? But I just want a good draw. Like I just want a new ground away from home. It doesn't need to be like an AFC Fylde or the Solihull Rotherham or the Rochdale Boston draw. I just want someone new away from home. I'm sick of going to the same grounds every single season. So basically, it's League One and below away from home.
All right, Guy. Who did you want and why?
Yeah, I think. Who did I want? That's a good, really good question.
I wanted the Rochdale / Boston United draw, because then it's a new ground either way.
Yeah. You know, it would have been nice to have a new ground, I agree. I like Rotherham, even though we have played them a lot, but now that Dom has mentioned
Guy,
it.
I don't like getting teams that you've played a lot. Very boring.
It is.
It is, though.
It actually is. And not too far as
it's
well.
It's the cup. You don't want to play. It's like everyone saying, oh, the Merseyside derby, what a great draw.
That's the worst.
It's not, the Merseyside derby's not a good draw, because they play each other, you know, twice in the Premier League. Yeah. If it was in the fifth round or the quarterfinals, to be honest, I'm like, okay, that's fine. But not in the third round. Mm. Like, no one cares.
Okay.
And also, it doesn't help that QPR, Chelsea, Brentford and Fulham are all drawn at home.
Oh, that one of them's going to get
moved. We are 100% playing on a Sunday, because Chelsea, you know, Forest won't be on TV.
Yeah, it's going to be Chelsea. It's going to be on, yeah.
Well, right. It's an interesting one. They have got
Aston Villa. Just put it on a Friday night. Get out of the way.
Well, that is true.
Big fan
Fulham
of Friday night
fixtures. Okay, Friday night maybe. Well, let's move on to Fulham's World Cup of the players of the decade. Four groups, four players in each. Dom, can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, so this is Richard Osman endorsed after our interview last week, because obviously he loves his World Cups polls on Twitter, so he's endorsed the Fulhamish one of the World Cup player of the decade, obviously from 2010 onwards. It's a bit weird that the Europa League season was 10 years ago, but we'll stick with that. Group A, very, very tough one this year. Mark Schwarzer, Danny Murphy, Ross McCormack and Brian Ruiz. This was a tough one for me.
I just want to say quickly, I've taken part in this, guy. I've voted.
So have I. I've got my reasoning and I'm ready to...
Yeah, no, but I would hope you'd vote. Yeah. You're from the Fulham team. I mean, I've got involved as well.
Yeah, it was a tough, obviously, between the two main ones in Mark Schwarzer and Danny Murphy here. I went Mark Schwarzer.
Can I say my criteria is a bit different? Well, maybe. So I've done it based on not the best player, but the importance that they had to that Fulham team at the time. And I think
this
And I think this should have been specified in the question, but that's a whole other thing.
Whoa.
Speak to Mr. James.
Division in the ranks at the Fulhamish team.
Speak to Sammy.
I think a few players were missed out. There should have been another category.
I reckon we could have done a round of 16, not even a quarter, is it?
Yeah, same.
Yeah, there's...
Definitely,
I think like a few of the players that were in the same groups as well.
Yeah, but if for me, I went Mark Schwarzer. I know Danny Murphy was vital to this.
We should have done a seeding in two and
yeah,
two.
Yeah, but I just thought
we missed the treat.
I just thought we 100% would not have reached any possible level we ever did without Mark Schwarzer.
Okay,
because he was so good. We haven't had a good keeper since. Matt Roddick is probably, or maybe, apart from Rico last season, is probably the best goalkeeper we've had since. We haven't had a stable number one since.
And who did you go with, Guy?
I went for Ross McCormack. Because otherwise we'd be a League One team right now.
Wow, that shocks me.
Ross McCormack really divides opinion at Fulham. Some people thought he was just there for the money, but then you have to look at his goals. Like, albeit it didn't work out, but without
I've got to
his
be honest,
goals,
I was surprised he was included.
He almost single-handedly kept us up for two seasons.
You are completely right, and I think where Dom says dividing opinion, I'm remembering all the other stuff, and when I say the best players, I never consider him. You know, Harriet sort of came to the end.
Some people say yes, he kept us up single-handedly for two seasons, but then some people argue, obviously, as soon as he left, we started doing well.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But is that just a matter because we had Savic Djukanovic at the helm and he was getting his first pre-season?
Definitely.
But I just went for Schwarzer because I don't think we've ever reached seventh. We would have never reached the Europa League final without him. I understand Danny Murphy had a key part to play in this as well. He's our captain. But Mark Schwarzer is possibly the best free transfer that anyone will ever make.
Goat free transfer. All right, Group B. Who were the players and who did you vote for here, Dom?
So we had Breda Hanglin, Tom Kearney, Dimitar Berbatov and Simon Davis. The player I voted for some reason has the lowest amount of votes and that's Simon Davis.
Really? Literally, when I looked at it, he was at 1% of the voting.
So it was just me.
1%. I feel a bit bad for Simon Davis.
He scores the goal and gets us back in the semi-final. Yeah. He scores the equaliser in the Europa League final. He was... Not even just critical in
Put
when we were
good.
Put some
respect on the man's name.
He was critical. He was critical when in the Great Escape season in 07-08.
That's not this decade, is it, mate?
I know, but I'm still saying his time. His time in the club, though.
Are we talking about the last 15 years? No.
No, but this decade, if you've got the Europa League run there. He is my favourite, if not one of my favourite Fulham players of all time. That's why I vote for him. But he scored. Okay, we ignore the stuff from the previous decade. I'm saying I'm speaking more of his time collectively at the club here. But player of the decade for me, Hanglin. Yes, he was amazing for us. But Simon Davis, I think just... There's so many memories I've got of him.
Okay.
That goal against Hamburg. That goal against Atletico Madrid. The free kick away at Sunderland. You know, the main ones.
You're stating your case strong here, but only 1% agreed with you, Dom. Guy, who did you go for?
Again, I've gone on importance and only one of these players scored the winning goal in a playoff final. And that's Tom Kearney. So I've gone for him.
Okay.
You're just wrong, aren't you?
It's interesting.
Breda Hengeland played... He left in 2013 when we got relegated. So
I mean, McGaff kicked him out.
Yeah. But so he only played for the first 3 years of the decade and was pretty poor in our relegation season. I know he's still a club legend.
Yeah. But you're going on this decade.
Yes.
That is
the question.
Guy's got criteria.
The question, the very, very specified criteria. It's not my criteria.
Yeah.
It says decade, and decade started in 2010.
Yeah, but if you're going on a quality...
Not Dom's decade.
Well, cause I think you can possibly make an argument for all four players in here. Because let's say you look at Hanglin.
Well, it's the grouping, once again.
His leadership, and, you know, it's Breda Hanglin. Even if you go to 2010 onwards, you've got Tom Kearney, you know, joins the club in Blackburn, becomes our club captain, scores the winning goal at Wembley. You've got Dimitar Berbatov, who's arguably the most skillful player the club's ever seen after George Best. And
unbelievable.
And you've got Simon Davis, who scored the goal in the semi-final and final of the Europa League. So I went with Simon Davis just because he probably is... After, you know, maybe Louis Saha, but no, he probably is one of my favourite Fulham players of all time, just because of what he brought to the club. So that's why I went with him. But yeah, people decided with Hanglin mainly at the moment. But remember, you've still got
mainly,
the time to
vote. 60%.
Yeah, mainly.
Simon Davies has crept up to 3%.
Oh, come on, boys.
He's in it because the voting is still open.
14 hours left.
Get on the Fulhamish Twitter and cast your votes now. Group C then, Dom.
We have Moussa Dembélé the first, Clint Dempsey, Ryan Sessegnon and Stefan Johansson.
And you went for...
Why is Stefan Johansson in there? Sorry.
I guarantee you this is a Jack Collins inclusion here. But I just went with Moussa Dembélé because maybe you say Berbatov was the most technically gifted player, the clubs I've seen, I said, but
Mistra is a tough group for me.
But Moussa Dembélé is the best player I've ever seen at Craven Cottage.
I would agree with that, but I've gone for Clint Dempsey.
I have to say, I've never voted for Clint Dempsey.
I wouldn't vote for him.
I'd vote for Dempsey as well.
I'd probably put Sessegnon above him.
No way, don't be stupid. Come on, Dom.
The way he left the club.
Yeah, I know. Things like that do linger.
I'm not going to vote for someone who
No, I'm similar. I am stubborn like that.
Someone who refused to play for the club.
Yeah, it's very true. And that's why these questions
are hard. And then when he came back, he was one of the worst players I've ever seen.
All right, well, finishing it off then. Group D, who have we got, Dom?
We've got Mitrovic, Zoltan Gira, Aaron Hughes and Tim Ream. I went with Zoltan Gira.
Wrong. There's only one answer here, and it's so obvious. It's unbelievable.
I think 70% of the people agree with you.
Yeah?
What, I voted Aaron Hughes, did I?
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely Aaron Hughes. He's the winner of these four groups.
He's still playing, isn't he? Probably.
Legend.
Do two go through from each group, or just...
I think it's just one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to form a final group.
Is that it?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much of a World Cup.
Semi-finals.
Two rounds?
Semi-finals. Okay. Semi-finals, final, job done. But I went with Zoltan Gira.
Legend.
Just,
I do like Gira.
I think it's just, yes, Mitrovic, you know, he's probably my favourite player we've got now, but I still, for the decade, though. I still think, for me, my best memories are going to... Obviously, I always feel your best memories are when you were younger.
Yeah.
I always feel like they are when you were younger. And Zoltan Gira did provide so many. Not just, you know, Europe. I just think... Just he sort of went and he came from not nowhere, but he wasn't favoured when he first joined the club. Albeit this was in 2008, 2009. But just the memories I've got of him in that Europa League run, that Juventus game. So, you know, the winner against Hamburg. That's memories wise is what made me go Zoltan Gira. But I totally understand people who obviously went for Mitrovic. You know,
who did you go for, Guy?
I went for Dempsey.
No, in the last group. Sorry.
Oh, in the last group. Oh, Mitrovic.
Not Aaron Hughes.
Not Aaron Hughes.
Not Tim Ream.
Aaron Hughes.
I know if Dennis Adoy was in here, you go for him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Fabry? How did he not make it?
That's
what I mean. What's gone wrong here, guys? Absolutely ridiculous. You can't have polls like this and not include the great man.
Well, the reason I went for Mitrovic is because I was actually, again, maybe taking the question a bit too literally, in that how long... Did Gira stick around after the Europa League? You know,
like, yeah. I guess I haven't looked.
You've done this with a fine tooth comb.
Well, like if you play out the whole decade, you've got to be there for at least 3 years.
Mm. I'm looking at they played for us in this decade, okay. and who's been my favourite player out of those four?
Well, that's different.
Just quickly, because I didn't. Who is winning? Because I know you said you voted. Do we say who was winning in each?
Oh yes. So Mitrovic is winning in the group D with 70% of the vote. Clint Dempsey's winning Group C with 53% of the vote.
Close.
Yeah, so Moussa Dembélé's on 30% there. Ryan Sessegnon's on inexplicable 14.
Simon Davies on the big 3% in Group B.
With Stephanie Hansen's on 3% as well. In Group B, Breda Hangeland 60%, Tom Kearney 29%. And Group A is the closest one. It's Mark Schwarzer on 40 and Danny Murphy on 44%.
Oh, that is extremely close. Not many votes for McCormack and Ruiz there. Voting is still open tonight and tomorrow morning, so get your vote across now because it could all change. Next day, we're talking to Stanley Hughes from One Stream in Bristol.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with a Fulhamish podcast, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow. Delighted to say, though, we are now joined by someone else, Stanley Hughes from the One Stream in Bristol, because it is Bristol City on the weekend. Fulham are flying high, 4 wins. Stanley, what are you making of Bristol City season so far?
Yeah, it's all right. I think the sort of opinions inside the club by the chairman and the manager with it. Top six was the minimum requirement this season. We sort of flirted with it in recent years and then faded away. After our opening game, we lost 3-1 to Leeds rather. And there were a lot of fans thinking, oh no, are we really going to be outside of the top six again this season? But we strengthened, signed 6 or 7 players, sort of got rid of stalwarts like Marlon Pack and Jamie Patterson. And considering the amount of injuries we've had, you know, Thomas Callas, our record signing, Benik Afobe was our top scorer, De Silva, our left wing back. To be in around the top six, you know, with the players we've missed out on, I think is somewhat a decent achievement.
If we're looking at Bristol City, one thing that it is often said is they're a very streaky side. You know, they always get in these runs of winning games, and then, you know, if you're looking at the form now, it's obviously only 2 wins in the last 5. What do you think that's down to?
The streakiness. Well, I guess it's Streaky Johnson, our little gaffer. Well, I think if we knew, then I think we'd win 46 in a row instead of winning 8, losing 8, winning 8, losing 8. It'd be nice to sort of have a season where you just trundle along, really. But I think to be honest, I think once our players come back from fitness and we see the likes of Jay De Silva, if we sign a striker in January, we might be bringing Jamie Patterson back as well, then we'll start to see this team really start to churn out the wins. And that's what happened last time this season around this sort of Christmas period. We went 14 games unbeaten.
Yeah, because obviously it's been, you know, you've been, as you said, floating with the top six for a couple of seasons now. But one thing that you mainly do is beat us at Craven Cottage, so you must be looking forward to coming on Saturday.
Yeah, can't wait. I must admit, I was just watching the two-minute compilation of our four most previous wins, and I got a Titanic music out for Lee Tomlin's last-minute free-kick winner. I've got to say, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the tickets for this away game sold out within 1 minute. They went on sale at 10 a.m. And by one pass, I logged on at one past and was pretty much the last person to get the ticket. Obviously, that's partly due to the, as you guys know well, the stadium reshuffling. But yeah, I think for some reason this sort of away game has been idolised by Bristol City fans. They can't get enough of Craven Cottage. But I guess when you win four in a row, you sort of want to be there for the fifth win.
Yeah, I remember that Lee Tomlin free kick. That was an absolute sucker punch, that goal. We were both struggling at the time, weren't we? And that was I said this before, that was the only time where I thought the Fulham were going to get relegated. but yeah, what other memories of Craven Cottage do you have as a Bristol City fan?
I mean, so I'm lucky. I've been there for the last two. I didn't go there for the League Cup or the Tomlin one, but I think I was in the middle of a forest and a loud scream and a few people came running in my direction, worried if I'd, you know, tripped over and broke my leg, but it was just celebrating Lee Tomlin's mercurial talent. I was there for the last two games. I loved the midweek game where we won 2-0. That was probably more enjoyable than the 4-0, just because there was so much talk about how Fulham maintained the ball, how you're three in midfield, and you've got to be worried about Tom Kearney. And I think we just shut you out the whole game. And when you've got Bobby Reid, who you guys know well, and Joe Bryan sort of running down the flanks, you've always got a chance. So I think the last two wins I've both been to. So those are the memories.
Yeah, because often in that 4-0 victory in the league, is people often say that's the best Championship side Fulham have seen in an individual game at Craven Cottage. So obviously, again, that's probably showing your streakiness. But if we're looking at the team this season, who has been the bright sparks of the season so far?
Well, unfortunately, I'd say it would be Benik Afobe. After sort of five games, he had sort of three goals and three assists or something like that, and it was finally, and Andreas Fireman finally had a strike partner who could run the channels in a similar manner, and we could press from the front, and Casey Palmer had two options all the time. In terms of bright spark, I'd say Dan Bentley was a good summer signing from Brentford. It's the first time Bristol City have spent money on a keeper for 3 or 4 years, and at £2 million, he looks, you know, a bit of a bargain in some ways. He's certainly saved us points already at this stage in the season. I think I'd have to go for Josh Brownhill, though. I mean, it's only his second full season at centre mid. In the recent games, he's playing out wide, but I think the sort of the consistency in his performances is quite surprising when you consider he's only 22.
If we're looking, obviously, at Thomas Kallas, you know, a player that Fulham fans know very well, spent two seasons on loan at the club. Do you think at Bristol City he's finally found his home after, you know, a billion loan spells away from Chelsea?
Yeah, I think it's £1.1 billion. You might need to check your stats there. He's a good lad, Thomas, and he was announced on the roof of Ashton Gate to much clamour and adoration from Bristol City fans. £8 million's a lot of money, even for a small tin pot club like us. I think that his home. Yeah, I mean, he signed on a permanent, so you'd hope so. It'd be a bit worrying if we sold him after just one full season. It's a real shame with his injury early on in the season, because he was looking pretty good. He's had a mixture of partners over this season. Last season, losing Adam Webster was huge. He's gone to Brighton for 20 odd million and hasn't really lit the world alight there, but we certainly missed that sort of running out from the back and ball playing centre back. But yeah, I think Kallas, I'm sure if you asked him, he'd say he's enjoying Bristol, because it's a nice place to live. It's certainly better than Middlesbrough.
And obviously you've got Bentley in goal as well. Like, for my money, he's been one of the best goalkeepers in the Championship in the past few years. How's he been for you?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. I think Lee Johnson said in an interview a few weeks ago that if the England goalkeeping squad suffered a few injuries, he should sort of be on the list to be called up. I think that's a little bit OTT in Johnson getting ahead of himself, but I think for £2 million, he's certainly a bargain. And he's one of those keepers, really, where he can sort of do it all. You know, he's got good distribution, he's big enough, he's physical enough, he talks, he seems like quite an intelligent chap and keen to communicate with what is sometimes a young back four in our team. So yeah, I think he's been fantastic and certainly money well spent.
If we look, obviously, we spoke about your attack and, you know, Benagophobe and Vryman. You talk about your defence and goalkeeping, Bentley and Callis. So we look at the midfield. Who is the one to cause the most damage there? Is it the obvious answer, which people will be looking at in Brownhill, or do you think there's, you know, sort of trouble from all over the middle of the park?
I'm interested to pick up on the word damage, because most of our centre mids don't get too many goals and assists. I mean, Brownhill sort of will flirt with shots sometimes from distance. I think, it's only me thinking, if we're going to go for it, we'll play 4-4-2, and Brownhill will be on the right mid, despite being normally a centre mid. And on the other side will be Nicholas Eliasson, who's the top assist maker in the Championship. He's sort of been in and out of side over the last 2 years. You get a sense that Lee Johnson maybe doesn't trust him defensively. But considering the amount of assists from set pieces and goals he's scored with limited game time, he started against Huddersfield and he got a goal and 2.5 assists. Maybe one was chalked off because it was an own goal. So I think he's the one to cause danger. He might start, he might come on the hour mark while we change our formation, but he's the one to cause the most damage, rather, to Fulham.
Well, Stanley, the tickets sold out in 1 minute. You was lucky enough to get one of those. What is your score prediction for the weekend?
Oh, score prediction. I mean, to win 4, I mean, it's the shooter's fallacy, isn't it? You know, if something keeps happening, you presume it's going to happen forever. So only an idiot would predict a fifth win in a row for Bristol City, which is why I'm going to go 3-1 to us.
3-1, Stanley. I wasn't expecting that. Always a pleasure to talk to you, though, Stanley, and have you on the show. Look forward to speaking to you again soon. Stanley Hughes there from One Stream in Bristol. He was saying 3-1. Ooh, I mean, Fulham on a 4-game winning streak, Dom. How's this one going to play out in your prediction?
Well, it's a tough one because we literally just always lose to Bristol City at home. I remember the game where we played them twice in a week. I think we played in the League Cup and then in the league, and we lost both, conceding probably about 7 or 8 goals in the process. I think Tammy Abraham basically just tore us apart twice in the space of a week when he was on loan there. So it's a tough one. Yes, we're on this great run of form, but it's Bristol City at home. We haven't beaten them in the league since we've come down from the Premier League the first time, and obviously they got promoted from League One, so who knows. But on our run of form, you'd expect we're going to put that behind us. You know, that's an old team. That's not what this team's about. So yeah, I think we should be looking to win this game. You shouldn't be looking at anything else. I understand the poor record, but it's Bristol City at home, a fellow player contender at home. This is a game you simply must win.
And what is your score prediction? You almost sounded like you was talking yourself into that.
No, I'm going to go 3-1.
Fulham. Yeah, it's the same scoreline as Stanley, but the reverse guy.
Yeah, I mean, until we just spoke to Stanley then, I was really fancying it. But but now he's reminded me of
he's got in your head.
Just what a poor record we do have against him. But yeah, I mean, talk about streaky, they're so inconsistent. And they've lost to West Brom 4-1 away recently. So I feel
think
like
any teams they've beaten in the last five is Huddersfield and Cardiff.
Yeah.
They're not going to make 3 relegated teams out of 3.
Hello. yeah, I'm going to go Fulham win. I'm going to go 3-0.
3-0. So you're not that worried. He's still going 3 goals and a clean sheet. Fulham getting the result against Bristol City. Well, how will it play out? We will, of course, be here next week to talk about. But next, it is another tradition. It is your listener questions.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with a Fulhamish podcast, Guy Barlow and Dom Betts. We were just talking to Stanley Hughes from One Stream in Bristol about the game on the weekend and doing the Fulham's World Cup of Players of the Decade. Still time to vote in that one on the Fulhamish Twitter, and we've done a Swansea review. Now, though, we get you involved even more because we are taking your listener questions, and we had one into the studio tonight. Thank you for that. And still can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. And this one from Harry Prowse, it says, what are the best away fans that have visited the Cottage so far this season, and what was our best away day so far?
I think when you're looking at fans who come to the Cottage, we haven't had the so-called clubs you'd expect to make the most noise. I'm thinking the likes of Sheffield Wednesday, Preston are always good.
Huddersfield,
Bristol City. We haven't had them at Craven Cottage yet, you know, Cardiff. So I think we're going so far, me and Guy agreed, probably Charlton.
Yeah, I reckon it was the first time we played them in a few years.
They were doing really well at the time.
And they brought a big attendance, didn't they?
They did, and given it to Parker as well. Obviously, and they did a little booze cruise down the river as well, I believe, even though it was a 12:30 kickoff. So
nice.
9 a.m. from
the good stuff
down from Greenwich. But Charlton for me.
All right, and what was your best away day when you are the travelling fan?
It's just going to be
Dom's already laughing.
It's just Swansea, and there's no other answer.
Yeah, okay.
It was just, not necessarily the game, just the day in general, I reckon.
The day in general, the night out after.
Yeah, the night after. Potwell Swansea, it was lit.
Absolute flames. Potwell Swansea on my things to do apart from eat an oatcake at Stoke and visit the car park near there. Yeah. That's generally what happened on the Flemish Radio. Yes. Yeah. I'm not going crazy.
George Cooper asking all the big questions.
All the big questions.
What are we going to do at Stoke when we come to watch our team?
Can't beat it from George Cooper. Guy, what was your best away day so far?
Probably sentimentally, because I went to uni in Sheffield, so even though it's a poor result.
Yeah.
Big fan of that city, so yeah.
Okay. Next question. This one comes from Hugo FFC. Carney from deep was a brilliant tactical adjustment from Scott Parker, but five at the back in the closing minutes, was that good or bad? Because it simply invited pressure.
I think he is adapting tactically and working out how to hold on to leads, because you can't just play the same way for 90 minutes. He's not a football manager here. You know, you can't just play the same system which you know is going to work and it's going to get a result.
And there's his weekly Football Manager reference.
Exactly.
Tick.
Yeah. No, but I think I
Don Betts bingo.
Yeah.
I've got house.
I do think that Scott Parker is learning tactically how to adapt and how to protect leads, because we are seeing it now. We are. There's sometimes how many taking the lead and then we've been pegged back, or how many times have we gone behind and we haven't been able to come back from the lead. We went behind at QPR. And we won the game. So I think we're seeing from Scott Parker now that he is adapting tactically and he's become more tactically aware. And I think, I don't think dropping to the back five is an issue. I think if you are protecting the lead, it kind of makes sense.
I agree. And especially when the players we're bringing on, Cyrus Christie is actually a very good attacking outlet, as we've spoken about before. And when he is playing in that five, Christie, I think there's less pressure on him defensively because we know he's not the greatest. And also, my guy, Denny Adoy, he can play centre-back, can't he?
Well, this is it, because this brings us on to the next question from Michael B. Why has Adoy become the Belgian Cafu?
He's always been the Belgian
Cafu. What do you mean become?
Lack of respect.
Cafu's the Brazilian Adoy, isn't he?
Exactly.
Okay, I like it. We know where you two stand on that. This next question comes from Mike. It says, do we have any idea why Scott Parker prefers playing the likes of Onomar over a homegrown player like O'Reilly or DLT? Is it just because he came in over in the Cess deal? As an American, I do love having one in the side, but Ream can't do it forever.
I think De La Torre kind of had he's not had his chance properly, but like, he's had opportunities, and you know, you can't sign someone like Onomar. I understand he was part of a deal, and then just totally abolish him. Yes, he's been pony, but
that's bingo.
Mike's got Hass. Yeah, he just put his arms in the air. Two of us.
But I do think
guys still waiting.
I do think there's something to do with it in the amount of games he has to play. I know we've got him on a permanent deal, but I do think there must have been something. I reckon it was like the Shea Ojo deal with Liverpool, because he 100% had to play a certain amount of games, because then after he played that games, he just disappeared.
With good reason. And like, Rangers fans are finding exactly the same thing about how terrible a player he is.
Yeah,
but Onomar, it's a shame, isn't it? Because if you look at him physically, he's got like all the attributes, like clearly...
Mate, he got great assist against Swansea.
Oh, yeah, world class.
Great fake shot. Great dubby.
I can't even. This next question comes from Dan Winter. After Friday's performance by Onomar, has it become clear now that we need a central attacking midfielder in January in case we lose Bobby to injury again?
We've never had a backup central attacking midfielder.
Yeah. No, but it's an interesting point about how Kearney played a lot deeper on Friday night, didn't he?
I also think he's better there.
Yeah, I thought he had a very good game. He was... I think the criticism of him is, or the conception is, that people think he's, you know, a bit soft in the tackle. But he actually put himself about a bit, and he's, you know, class at just picking it up, recycling it, moving it around, creating space.
Recycling it.
Yeah, you know, that's the lingo.
I love it.
He did give away like a dangerous free kick on the edge of the box, so he's clearly not the best.
Put it in the wrong recycling box.
But I agree. I like him. Playing slightly,
I think,
further deeper.
When he is playing further forward in the more number 10 role, people expect him to get goals, expect him to get assists, expect him to work on Mitrovic a lot more, whereas Bobby Reid is used to working off that other number 9. I think it just suits the team a lot more to have Kearney deeper with Johansson or Reid there, with obviously Bobby Reid being close to Mitrovic.
All right, well, this next question comes from Colm. It says, which of which, if any, of the five on loan players would you be happy with us signing permanently at the end of the season? Which ones, and which ones do you think we should be expecting an upgrade?
I think Harrison Reed is the one for me I'd want straight away. I think he's been the best holding midfielder we've had this season so far. Better than McDonald, better than Tariata, probably better than Johansson in that role. So for me, the first one I definitely want to get is Harrison Reed. Albeit he might not make the step up, but even as a squad player in the Premier League, I think he'd definitely do a job. And you know, Knockhart, no, I'm not buying him. Passion merchant, as Guy would say. There's one good
that's
thing.
That's my bingo.
There's one good thing he's good at, and that's wasting time. He's world class at wasting time. He was born to waste time. Especially in that second half against Swansea, the amount of time he's got the ball to, like, the throw-in when he'd ask Joe Bryan to come over, then tell him to go away again, then he'd be like, oh no, I need to take it now. So he's good at wasting time, just not very good at actual football. Ivan Caballero, I'm yet to be sort of convinced by him. I don't think he's as great as Harry Arter. He's just a nutcase. So for me, the only one I'm properly looking at the moment is Harrison Reed.
Yeah. Again, the question is, like, be positive. Who do we want to sign? But in reality, is that I don't want to sign Knockhart permanently. Even though it at the time it looked like such a good deal, it was like $10 million for a guy like in his supposed prime. But yeah, Harrison Reed is the only one for me.
Harrison Reed is the only one for Guy. Well, unbelievably, we've come to the end of the Fulham fan show. We won't be here at the same time next week because Fulham are off. They're not going to be here. This is a real shame for me. I will cry somewhere in a corner. I will take my Fulham bingo with me and remember the show anyway. But we'll be back the week after that to talk all about the games in between and see if Fulham can keep up this winning streak that they are on. This has been the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with Don Betts and Guy Barlow.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.